Yes, I'm gonna tell you about the paper that we've written with this people, Krzysztof Grodziana, Anna Kamińska, Stefan Pokorski, Andy Weiler. And yeah, it's probably the most untimely paper I've ever written in the UK, because it's about Higgsless models, and if you read mainstream media, Higgs has basically already been seen in the LHC. But yeah, I'll at the end comment how this, is there anything that is of this that might be left in when Higgs is discovered? Yeah, not much, but... So, I'll give you some introduction, and then I will not advertise some sort of a simplified approach to Higgs's theories in line with the recent wave of simplified models to just grasp the most important features of a kinematics, of a phenomenology at LHC. And this is what we've done for the Higgs models. Then I'll discuss the parameter space of these models, and the parameter space of these models is set by the unitarity constraints of the theory. And then at the end, there'll be some brief comments about the phenomenology, the Tevatron constraints, and the predictions for the LHC. So yeah, so that's the main question to be addressed at the LHC, is who broke electroweak symmetry, and it's... at the more quantitative level, the question is what stops the growth of the scattering coupling system W? It's well known that within the standard model, without the Higgs, if we compute the scattering of the 2-2-2 scattering of W bosons, we find that when we put longitudinally polarized states in the initial and the final state, then the amplitude grows with energy. And at some point, it violates the unitarity constraint. So there must be something that enters here that stops this growth if the theory is to be extended above 1 TeV. And we have three basic possibilities that we can imagine. First possibility that might be mentioned is that there is some non-perturbative effects that actually save unitarity. Unfortunately, there is no concrete framework so far. There is some recent attempts, for example, that go under the name of classical laws, but I don't think it's yet at this stage that we can say that it's this is a concrete possibility. Then we have the usual possibility that the electric breaking is weakly coupled, and by this we mean that we have a fundamental scalar coupled to W, W, and Z, and this is known as the Higgs, or the physics that says the unitarity might be strongly coupled, that and comes under its guise of composite vectors coupled to electric gauge bosons, and this is known as the Higgsless theory. And finally, there can be a combination of these two possibilities, and this goes as the name of the composite Higgs. So in this talk, I will focus on this possibility where Higgsless models where the unitarity is saved by introducing a composite vector. So how do we describe this Higgsless theories? I can distinguish three possible approaches. The first one is top down. We just write down a theory who like QCD confines in the infrared, condenses, breaks this condensate, breaks the electric symmetry. This goes under the name of Technicolor, and this is the most ambitious approach because we deal with a complete consistent model. It's also most difficult because of our notorious inability to handle strongly coupled theory. So although there has been a lot of work done, it's probably safe to assume that we haven't, in this way, we haven't reached all the possibilities, all the possible dynamics or distinctly phenomenological possibilities that may show up at the LHC. Then there is a less ambitious, more effective approach where we start, for example, with finite theories or three-state deconstruction model that a simple theory that is supposed to capture the gross features of this underlying technicolor models. And again, in this case, this is a very fruitful approach, and it has led to a lot of new understanding in the possible collider phenomenology of these theories. But again, it might be that some very distinct some phenomenology can be missed when you're constrained to this model. And another effective approach is to use the color Lagrangian. This was an approach that has proven very successful for in the QCD case. And the idea is that we describe the low energy degrees of freedom in some systematic expansion, for example, the expansion in powers of P squared. And we are given the low energy symmetries, and then we can describe the most general thing. So this is something I will try to do here. So, however, I will try to just do it in a way, introduce just the minimal number of degrees of freedom that is required by keeping the theory unitary up to some higher scales. And this sort of simplify the philosophy has been recently very, very popular in the context of LHC searches, and that has been done in the context of supersymmetry theories. Instead of dealing with the full-fledged supersymmetric model like the MSSM and describe the sections of its parameter space in a little, which might be hide the actually the physics that is going there, we just write a simple model that retains some degrees of freedom of this theory, and you can very well in this way understand the how the existing collider searches constrain the kinematics of that theory. So I'll try to do a little similar thing in the case of Higgs's theories, just focus on few basic indispensable degrees of freedom. And once I started with this degrees of freedom, I will try to understand what is the most general kinematic possibilities that can arise in a low-energy effective theory described by Kalan and Lagrangian that describes degrees of freedom. So that's what I'll try to convince you, that it will provide a very ample and very convenient characterization of the allowed parameter space. You can understand what are the current limits and the future LHC reach. And besides, it might be that the Technicolor scale, so that this full underlying, the scale of this full underlying theory, will turn out to be pretty high at the edge of the close to the reach of the LHC, in which case there will be a few degrees of freedom available anyway, and this maybe this sort of description will be the most adequate. So now let me describe what the model is. So what could be the possibilities? We want to unitarize the WW scattering. We have to introduce a particle that is an agent that provides the new contributions to the amplitudes that tame the growth of this scattering amplitudes. So just quite generally, we can imagine that we can classify these possibilities that using the Lorentz representation of the particle, and then using the representation of the Castodel SU2 symmetry. So we can have a scalar, a vector, or a tensor. We can have a singlet or a triplet under SU2. But it turns out that if you want to keep the couplings of the, we can also have a high representation. So that will be distinct possibilities, of course. So it turns out that not every representation we can couple it to W and Z in a way that will not induce a large correction to the T parameter. So for a singlet, we have for a Lorentz scalar, we should make it a Castodian singlet, and that's basically the Higgs boson. For a vector, we have to make it a triplet of the Castodian SU2, and then we will deal with the whole triplet of resonances. And again, for a tensor, the simplest possibility that it's consistent with small correction to the T parameter is a singlet. Tensor is a little bit so this is just the Higgs tensor is a little bit fishy, because when you introduce it, you wanna cancel the pieces of the amplitude that go like S over V squared. You always introduce another piece that goes like S squared. And in that case, basically the amplitude always blows up almost immediately at the scale of this new particle that you introduce. So that's the one downside of this choice. So this vector that is a triplet under a custodial SU2 that appears as a minimal choice that is distinct from common models.
Why doesn't a vector, which is a custodial singlet, give you a contribution to a T-parameter?
Well, because you just cannot couple it this way that... cannot... how would you couple? So you have W and Z, yeah? Who are adjoints, yeah? Under...
singlet, there's no way to couple it at all. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
I'm asking you what that red X means.
So for a vector, yeah, so W and Z, W's are triplets of the custodial, yeah? So you would have to trace it, yeah, then you question is you would probably you just cannot contract Lorentz indices, yeah, then this way. Well, there is no way
here. Some kind of W dagger, G mu, W times gamma mu or something, I don't know.
In QCD I have the omega, right, which is a trivial symbol. And you're telling me it doesn't appear as an S channel or WW scattering or something? Is that what you're telling me? Or? I haven't thought about this, but it's not clear to me what that X means.
But make it decays to three pi, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
it doesn't have a coupling.
Is that the statement? It just doesn't appear.
Sorry, what was your statement
then? Simply make it decays to three pi, it's not two.
There's just the way it's written there, it says that it means the T parameter, and I suspect it's just that it doesn't appear.
It's just saying there's no custodial symmetry respecting coupling that you can reach on.
Yeah, I mean.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
I guess the point is that the W dagger, that DAW, would have no Z counterpart that would allow you to preserve custodial symmetry or something like that.
Oh, so again, what it says is that if you, the standard model of the pieces are triplets of the custodial, yeah. And there is when you have a Higgs, you just couple Higgs to WW plus ZZ, yeah. And that's a custodial invariant, yeah. For a vector, I don't see the way how you can do this, yeah, in a custodial invariant way.
Because the W and Z couplings can't match, I guess, or something in a custodial way. Okay,
Well, surely you can write higher derivative operators that you can, where you have a total gauge invariant on one and on the other. But that may not be useful for you.
Yeah,
multiplying tensor multiplication with SU2K representations.
Well, that was what I was.
If I go to SU2 left plus SU2 right, both. The left and the right-handed currents that both have the W's and Z's in them, they're both adjoints. Seems like I could couple them to a singlet in a SU2 invariant way.
No, I don't see it. How would you do it?
Two adjoints in a singlet?
Yeah, but you have also the Lorentz. Okay.
They're both vectors. Well, because, you have
three vectors. Yeah, so this statement doesn't include the other.
This is what you're saying about tree level? I mean, sorry, about
normalizing.
Yeah, it's a statement on the non-derivative level, yeah, so that's... Yeah, I'll think about it more. So yeah, so now the degrees of freedom that we want to describe, so let's just concentrate just on the gauge sector for the moment. I'll talk about fermions briefly towards the end of this talk. Yeah, so we have the standard model gauge bosons, SU2 and T1 gauge bosons. Then we need the three Goldstone bosons, I will call the pi, and who are the longitudinal components of this gauge bosons. once they get the mass, and then we have an approximate heterogeneity. So this is this setup by itself. We can describe using the usual kind of Lagrangian approach. Yeah, we introduce the nonlinear sigma model field U that under the SU to left plus SU to right symmetry, it transforms as by fundamental way. Then we, in order to introduce the gauge fields, we simply weakly gauge the SU to left and the U1 subgroup of SU to right. And that will describe our standard model Lagrangian without the Higgs. Now, when we want to introduce the resonances, I will denote by rho, like analogy to the QCD rho mesons. Just like in QCD, there is several formalisms that use a little bit different transformation properties of the spectral meson under the custodial SU2. However, in proof that this has been done in the context of QCD, that this is equivalent when you include higher order operators. So what I will do here is using the hidden gauge symmetry formalism. So we start with this nonlinear sigma model field, and we split it into two components, and we assign these components the transformation law. This is as before, under SU2 left. This is the transformation under the new hidden SU2 that I introduced. And again, the other component transform under SU2. So, this way of doing it, I doubled the number of degrees of freedom. Before we had 3 degrees of freedom, these 3 pions in this nonlinear sigma model field. Now we have these 2 fields that we have 6 pions, and that's okay because we will have 3 new Goldstone bosons that are eaten by this heavy vector resonances. So we can parameterize this Goldstone bosons in this way, and then we introduce the gauge fields by, okay, sorry, I didn't introduce the parameter alpha, I will introduce it in a second. Then we introduce the gauge fields by weakly gauging the symmetries, and we introduce the rho mesons by gauging this hidden SU2 symmetry. We have introduced the new gauge coupling, zero. So then, all of it, we can, once we have these 2 objects, we can define 2 new objects that are adjoints of SU2, and then they have definite transformation properties under the parity. So this is V plus will be even under the parity that exchanges left and right, and minus will be hot under this parity. And then if we insist on conserving the parity in the Lagrangian, at the leading order, we can have, there are only 2 terms that we can write down. One is V plus or V minus. This normalization is such that the standard model gauge bosons, they have a correct mass, just like doing the standard model V squared over 4 for W squared. And one of the 3 parameters that we introduce, I denote it here as alpha, is just the relative normalization between those 2 terms. So just let's do the parameter counting. We had the V, G, and G prime that are fixed by the standard, by the measured standard model quantities. And we have 2 new parameters. We have here is alpha and zero that was just entering here the covariant derivative. It's just two new parameters, and they set the mass of the rho, they set the coupling of the rho to 2 pions. And so at the end of the day, we can use either these 2 couplings as our parameter space, or mRho and these couplings, and so on. We can choose either of the 2 combinations of these parameters to characterize our parameter space. But at the leading order, in this model, the parameter space is just 2-dimensional. One can also say that mention that if you approach it by so-called free-sided deconstruction model, then you actually you finish with a constraint case of this scenario corresponding to alpha equals 1, or where 0 by pi is half of 0.
So when you only write down
local. Local. Yeah, but that's how the three-site model originally was defined. Yeah. Now we can, if you write non-local terms connecting the links, you basically you can have the same thing as here.
The
KSRF
relation is some choice of
Again?
KSRF relation.
KSRF. Now, if you don't insist on parity, for example, if you're, then there is one more term that you can write, simply the one that connects W V minus V plus, and then what happens is that as before, rho coupled to two pions only. Now there is a coupling of rho to three pions, and in terms of phenomenology, you will get the decay of rho to three W bosons. Sorry, three yeah. Three W's or two W's and T's. So now, okay, so that defines the model, and now.
That's actually very natural in this actually very, very natural. You have complete parity.
Yeah. I will comment how the breaking of parity affects this the restoration on the unitarity of the theory. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm confused. What happens to beta equals to 1?
Well, beta equals to 1, I should write it that the beta is constrained to be between 0 and 1 in this parametrization, so it's like some sine from some angle. You can imagine that it's, in a QCD theory, you have a vector and axial mesons, yeah? Now you can imagine that you make combinations of those, yeah? And this beta corresponds to the mixing angle between the two. So I will assume that beta is equal to 0 and 1 here. So now what will define the parameter space of this is the unitarity relation. So the only a portion of this parameter space defined, for example, by the two couplings, by 0 and 0 pi pi, the theory makes sense because it doesn't lose unitarity below the mass of the lightness rest. So just a short reminder, what is unitarity? Just we have theory of the S matrix implies this relation. If you have alpha and beta are two final states, initial and final state, if you make the initial and final state the same, then you can write this relation in the form of the Argand circle, which tells you that the real part of the amplitude has to be less than 1, 2 up to the phase space factor. Then this relation is very conveniently projected into the partial waves by integrating the amplitude with the Lejeune polynomials. And then this relation holds for each partial wave. Damn it, the game doesn't show up. Okay, there is a diagram here. Why? It's very simple. Yeah? It's not rocket science there, but just wanted to. But if I write here, nobody will see it here from there.
It's okay.
So I can... Where is it? Show. No, my screen is not neither, but in the before it was. It's probably when I changed the resolution, then it vanished. Yeah, so we are interested in a scattering of longitudinally polarized W bosons by equivalence theorem. It's... or it's the same as the scattering of the pions that are eaten by good ones. When you compute this amplitude, you will have a quartic term that is just a contact term that comes from the Kalla branch, and then you will have terms exchange of the of this rock resonance. You write the amplitudes. You can write it in this form, and what will happen is so the amplitude is given by this expression. Then you project it to the S wave. You find the following expression with the S wave pipe scattering amplitude of this form. So there are two things that are worth. Two things that are worth stressing here. We have a term that goes like S over P squared is just a standard model term. And then there is analogous term that also grows as S over P squared, and that comes from the exchange of resonances. And its coefficient depends on the ratio of the coupling of rho to pi pi to the G-rho coupling. So you can see that you can, when you vary this ratio, you will get a different effectiveness of canceling this term. So, for example, in the three-state deconstruction or in the five-dimensional Higgs models, the relation between these two is that G rho pi pi was half of G rho, in which case this coefficient would be 3/4. Yeah, so that would cancel 3/4 of this original standard model growth, and the rest would be canceled by the heavier resonances. From the point of view of the scalar regression approach, this ratio is a free parameter, and so you can make it larger and make this cancellation more effective. And actually, been pointed out earlier in the literature that if you make it actually this coefficient of S over E squared, you can cancel it completely, or you can make it even slightly negative, in which case it's the most advantageous for keeping unitarity, because you also have a logarithmically growing term here. So in this case, if this coefficient is slightly negative, it will cancel with this slowly growing logarithmic term, and you will be able to keep the unitarity of this WW scattering up to pretty high scales. So what I just said is illustrated here. If this coefficient is slightly negative, what happens is that the amplitude grows first due to this logarithmic term, and then when this quadratic term kicks in, you get a turnaround, and then this amplitude, this is the absolute bound. That's why it bounds here. The violation of unitarity is postponed up to much higher scales than you would naively expect. So, and now we can go back to our parameter space. So instead we can parameterize the parameter space by two couplings, G rho and the coupling of rho to pi pi. And here is the allowed parameter space overlaid with the contours of the constant m rho, 1 TeV, 2 TeV, 3 TeV. M rho is just a function of these two parameters on the electrolytic scale. What happens in this white area is that the unitarity is lost at the scale below the mass of the MRO. It means that this setup doesn't make sense, because before you can describe MRO, your theory lost unitarity. And here we have the contours of what the cutoff of the what the maximal possible cutoff of the theory. What is the scale at which the unitarity is lost? And you can see, like close to the line 0, which is 0 by pi, this scale of where the unitary loss can be very high. Actually, it can be, by tuning the coefficients, it can be even much higher than the 6 that is marked here. It can be well above 10 dB if you tune the parameters. So this is the conclusion that comes just from the scattering of WW into WW. However, there are some there is a diagram of these other processes. You have the processes of inelastic production of, for example, of two rocks. Yeah, so you scatter two W's and you produce two rocks. You compute this amplitude, And then you find that again it grows like s over m rho squared in this case. And the coefficient is proportional to this 0 pi pi. So, and it's always positive. You don't have any parameter to cancel it here. That means that once you cross the threshold of 2 rho, you can easily lose. This will in general lead to a unitarity loss, and the faster, the larger is the coupling. On the other hand, for the scattering of pi pi into pi pi, large coupling was advantageous to keeping unitarity up to high scale. So there is some sort of two opposing tendencies, and that we are considering the scattering of the inelastic scattering into these raw mesons will lead to a conclusion that the cutoff cannot be as high as you could imagine just looking at the pi pi scattering. So another process that also provides the unitarity constraint is the scattering of rho pi into rho pi. That one also grows like s over m rho squared. I didn't give you the expression, but can put, and you find that it again grows like s over m rho squared. The coefficient depends on, it's all again always positive and depends on 0 pi pi and 0. And that also can lead to faster loss of unitarity, and actually the threshold for this is at m rho and not at 2 m rho in this case. So in some cases, like the one plotted here, the amplitude for this scattering is the first one that leads to the unitarity loss. So what I plotted here was the scattering for this dashed line is the pi pi to pi pi, that would lead you to the conclusion that you can have a cutoff here. But then when you include also the inelastic scattering to rho rho, you get this amplitude that blows up at the 2 m rho threshold, and the unitarity loss is becomes much faster, and then you have also constraints from this rho pi to rho pi processes.
Okay.
Huh? They are both. So actually, there are two independent. There are two unitarity constraints on the amplitudes. I don't have that here on the plots, but for this rho pi to rho pi, when you project it into this SU2 space, you have two independent functions, and then there is a unitary constraint on the sum and on the difference. So that's when you include this constraint from rho scattering and scattering into two rows, this is what you find, that this region here of abnormally high cutoff just vanished. However, you can still have a theory that is perfectly unitary. It's, let's say, 2 TeV m rho and 4 TeV cutoff, so
theory that is pretty well defined, has a pretty well defined range of applicability.
So this is what may happen in this parameter space.
What happens if you just keep going up?
Okay, so why put the boundaries? Yes, I put the, here we have a 0 that this becomes 4 pi. When it's larger, your theory is, you don't have any predicted power of your simplified model. Also what happens here is that the rows become so wide that the width becomes bigger than their the mass.
You would say in this class of models, the maximum cutoff you can ever get is 4 squared.
Yeah, so that's the conclusion. Yeah, so you can have a theory with a 4 TeV cutoff. We didn't find anything about that, yeah? So remember also how we define the no-go region, yeah, that the cutoff is basically at the mass of the rho. Yeah, that's the best, I mean, the minimal assumption, yeah? In principle, you should make these lines a little bit more blurry, yeah, because you want a theory that is valid a little bit above the cutoff to make any sensible predictions. Yeah, but that doesn't change much. Yeah, cutoff is boundary. And this is what happens if you turn on this parity breaking. So what happens here is that actually if you make a beta close to 1, and this parity breaking order parameter make it close to 1, what happens is that m rho
becomes larger because it goes like 1 over 1 minus beta squared. So all this region of high G rho becomes inaccessible just because M rho is too large. The mass of the resonance is too large, so you don't have a chance to save unitarity using that. This is what happens to the parameter space; it gets squeezed. But in principle, again, you have the regions with the high cutoff and relatively high M rho. Okay, so at the end of the day, the comment on the electric precision observables, I was postponing it because it's always the most worrying aspects of all Higgsless theories. So if you just we know this plot comes from LEP. When we are in the standard model, the Higgs kind of GV, we are here, the origin of SMT parameter space. Here is the ellipse, experimental ellipse. But if we don't have a Higgs or equivalent, we have a healthy Higgs, we are pushed far away out of the ellipse. Now what happens when we add the resonances? When we integrate the resonances, we get a tree-level contribution to S that takes us even further from that ellipse. So that's bad. So that this contribution is bad. We would prefer it to be as small as possible because when we get here, we have no chance actually by getting the contribution to get back to the ellipse. So how can you make this contribution smaller? First one, natural possibility is to make a G-rho very large, close to the perturbativity limit, but then again we lose the predictive power of the theory, this effective model. Another way is to add an axial resonance that will contribute negatively here. Within the context of the simplified model, you can actually add a p squared p to the fourth operator of this form. And if you integrate it out, if you integrate out rho, you get another contribution to delta s that actually can cancel with this contribution to s. And finally, so that was actually why we thought it was useful to look at this parity breaking theories. If you introduce this parity breaking, and again we have this order parameter for parity breaking, we can have a negative contribution, effectively negative contribution to delta S that goes down. Yes.
What was alpha again?
Alpha was this was the parameter in the Kyle Lagrangian that was the physical meaning is the relation between 0 by pi and 0.
The beta squared over alpha could be greater than 1.
Yes, it could be, but I'll show you the parallel. No, I will not show you that. I'll show you the paper, okay? There is no parameter space considered with unitarity that corresponds to that. There is no we don't have any negative S.
We could also just have a positive
two
parameter.
Yeah. No, but you want to have positive, but first you don't want to get here, because then even positive t doesn't help you, yeah? You want to stick here. Yeah? That's the game. So what about the t here? And here again the situation is not so bright. When you compute delta t, including the contribution of the resonances, so the standard model contribution is actually gets smaller if this alpha parameter is not too high. And actually, what we want it to be is around 2, between 1 and 2, that's the best case for unitarity. So you get a little bit back, but you always get effectively negative with respect to the standard model. You cannot get positive just in contribution to t in this case. So you can reduce it, but you never go back fully to the ellipse. So you need something else to get
there. I understand that delta t being negative would take you down in that plot, right?
No, no, okay, so this is the standard model part. This is negative, and this is this thing. Now, when you introduce the resonances, you get less negative contribution.
Alpha is not too high. Now I understand. Okay,
got it. But this thing is always this bracket is always positive, so the whole thing is always negative.
Are you writing down every operator? You're not writing down every operator.
At the leading order, yes.
You're coupling the sim model only.
And it was this imposed custodial symmetry.
But you're coupling of the gauge, the standard model of gauge bosons. So you're gauging symmetries of this sector, right? But you're not writing down standard model currents times the new vectors you added.
Assuming essentially that he's integrating out some custodial symmetry preserving stuff to get this Lagrangian. Sure, if you had some stuff that violated custodial symmetry, you could add a whole bunch of them.
But I think there are other operators. Just standard model vector currents times the vectors that you added.
But would it be consistent with the symmetries that I... So what I told you so far, I introduced every, at the leading order, I introduced every possible operator. Then at the p to the fourth, you have more possibility to add p to the fourth.
I mean, even in the Carlo-Lagrangian, you can write a counter term for t.
Right? Yeah, I mean, you...
The two derivative term.
Yeah, sure, you can write this, right?
So you can certainly write that, and you can write other operators. It's custodial symmetry is a symmetry. You can preserve it or violate it by some small amount. So I don't see any reason why you should be scared of saying I have.
It says that you need some additional UV contribution. The infrared contribution of this resonance is not enough to be consistent with electrical signals. That's what it says. Okay, so now we are past the technicalities, and I just want to tell you how we can use this formulation to somehow neatly describe what is the current experimental situation and what is the possible LHC reach. So just how will this resonances will interact with the standard model? So the point is that when I wrote this Lagrangian, the flavor basis, the flavor base is the one that has a simple transformation and the gauge groups is not the same as the mass eigenset basis, because in the scale Lagrangian you get a mixing between rho and that. This mixing is suppressed by a small hierarchically parametrically small quantity, which is g over g rho. And when you find the eigenvalues of this Lagrangian, you find this M rho squared, that is proportional to G rho E, and the hierarchically small M W, that is proportional to G rho E. And you also find that in order to get mass eigenstate, you need to make a rotation so that the two mix, and the mixing angle is G over G is G rho. So the consequence of that is that when you write the cubic couplings, because of this mixing, you will get a coupling of 1 rho to 2 w's that is suppressed by 1 over g rho. So that's the robust model-independent coupling of the rho to the standard model. There is also coupling to the fermions, and you can make more assumptions about the fermion compositeness and so on. In the simplest case, if you assume that the standard model quarks and leptons are fundamental, it means that they couple only to SU2 cross U1, then after this mixing, you will again get the coupling of G over G rho suppressed by G over G rho. So this is the assumption I will be making here, but the caveat is here that in concrete models, you might expect these relations to be changed, especially for heavy fermions. For example, in many, many concrete models, the coupling of this resonance to the top quark is sizable, and that may change phenomenology. So what about the decays of that? We have the leading decay of the resonances will be to WW and ZW, and that can be understood because of the large coupling of the rho to pi. This is just the decay of the longitudinal components of W and Z. And then via this, in a sense, you have the coupling here is suppressed, but this suppression is only is spurious in the sense that you have a large coupling to the longitudinal component. So if you just put, when you compute the decay weights and you put the polarization vectors of the longitudinal components, this suppression will be cancelled and you will get large weights. On the other hand, that doesn't, it's not the case for fermions. For fundamental fermions, the coupling will be suppressed by 1 over G rho, and the branching fraction will be always will go like mw to the fourth over m rho to the fourth. So the decay, the branching fraction of rho into fermions, for example, into leptons, will always be very small. And this is this line, so for a 1 TeV resonance, it's already 10 to minus 3, and it becomes less for heavy resonance, and this is the branching fraction into WW and WC. So when you look for these resonances, you should look them as should look for resonant production of WW and WC. How you produce them? You have three basic processes: Drevin process, where quark antiquark produces a rho; vector boson fusion, where two W's collide to produce a rho meson; and then also rho straddle, where you produce an offshell W or Z and you radiate. So this is the cross section for these various channels, and 70 LHC and 40 TV LHC. This cross section, right here, this is true for G rho equals 4, and it scales like 1 over G rho squared because of this couple, 1 over G rho squared coupling. So for light resonances up to already 2 TeV, Drevin is the dominant process. Rho straddle is always subdominant. On the other hand, the vector boson fusion becomes important around 2 TeV, and this is because the vector boson fusion can be initiated by quark-quark collision rather than quark-antiquark, so the particle luminosity drops less rapidly. A similar situation in the LHC, only that the onset of where the W boson fusion becomes important is a little bit lower. So that's how you produce them. Then the current searches is for the moment, LHC hasn't presented any results, any search for WW and WZ resonances. They have only they measured the total W and WZ cross sections, but I think they're waiting probably for the lepton photon to show the results of the WW and WZ resonance searches, and that will be out soon. But for the moment,
isn't there ZZ?
Huh? There is no ZZ here. Yeah.
Oh, you don't ZZ.
I mean, that's a consequence of the custodial symmetry of being a triple under custodial symmetry. There is no ZZ here. Yeah?
Do you have a similar gluon fusion process? Oh, it's absolutely.
No. Well, if you have a top quark, yeah, I mean, that is strongly coupled to resonances, you would have a top loop. But that's our dimension 6 operator in this case, yeah, so that's probably more suppressed than for the Higgs. I never computed that. It's maybe not an interesting question. Compute how much the gluon fusion can be when you have a composite top and you couple top to the resonance.
I missed something here. How are you setting the coupling?
Okay, so I just picked one coupling here, yeah? And all
so it's not necessarily unitarizing at all of these
it is.
Points.
Actually, it is. How do I show you? So I picked the coupling G rho equals 4 just because it's unitarizing for any M rho here, yeah? It goes all the way to 3 TeV where it's great. You don't see M rho here, but M rho is, I think. So it's all that's why I picked this coupling, just because it's unitarizing in all this range. If I took 60 TeV, then at some point I would if I took 60, but if you change the G rho, it's just all these lines just scale like 1 over G rho. Yeah, so I mean the important conclusion is that for the moment the Drevin for the LHC is our best shot, and the vector boson fusion is not competitive at the moment. That will of course change when we don't see anything. And so again, this is the parameter space. Our two couplings, 0 and 0 pi pi. This is the allowed parameter space by unitarity. Remember that before I was plotting the contours of the cutoff. Now I don't plot it anymore. I want to show you the different things. So this is the bound from the D0 search for a WW and WD resonances. This cuts off this corner of the parameter space, and all the rest of the parameter space is allowed. Yeah, so that's some sort of nice propaganda plot. Yeah, there is a huge parameter space like in, well, I will not say that it's like in SUSY, but in...
Your constraint is probably roughly constant and rho.
I'll show you in the next plot, yeah? On the other hand, here I plotted the constraint from the latest search for Z prime going to lepton at the LHC. That's the one inverse center bar, and that's not competitive with the parameter. On the other hand, once it's here are the contours of the constant cross section. So this is 100 femtobarms, 10 femtobarms, 1 femtobarm. You may guess that we're at the with 1 inverse femtobarm, LHC is sensitive to more or less 100 femtobarm cross section. So then limits should be somewhere here once they are published.
So the thing that you plotted is just producing a technirho or whatever the case to 2 leptons.
Yeah.
And you're saying the branching ratio is very small. So if you just look at the invariant mass distribution, if it went to W's, which went to leptons, would it change the invariant mass distribution in a noticeable way?
Yeah, I think so. But so you can try to use. I'm sure that you can try to use this measurements of the cross section, yeah, that are out already from the LHC, from WWZ. Yeah, you should get a resonance there. But
I was just thinking of the Z prime to 2 leptons. So you have a 2 lepton invariant mass up to high masses. If you were decaying to W's, both of which went to leptons, it would change the shape of that distribution. It wouldn't produce a bump, but it would change the shape. So there may
not be joint missing energy or anything.
I haven't thought about it at all. Yeah. So I mean, the point is that the strongest constraint will be from the W and WZ searches that are in the pipeline. Right. And
I'm just wondering if there is a result now that might help you interpret it.
Well, I mean, they have these MLL distributions that fit into potential Higgs masses, right? And obviously, this would have some impact on the lepton mass distributions. Those include the missing energy cut.
The problem is with the Higgs searches, yes.
Numerically larger or smaller than the Higgs impact. I mean, that's something that maybe worked out.
So with the Higgs searches here, you cannot use it here because they have a specific Higgs, very Higgs specific cuts, yeah, in that, for example, on the angle between the two levels, yeah, because the Higgs is spin zero. And so you get the different angular distributions, and any of these modern Higgs searches, you cannot use it, yeah? In the beginning, they had very, very, very robust Higgs searches.
They can use it, but they may not be the most sensitive.
I mean, they will be very, I think, because actually they cut this very, very hard on this sort of a signal because of the cutting on the lepton on the angle between two leptons.
Yeah, as I said, it may be not as sensitive as what they could do, that's for sure.
Also, SUSY opposite sign dileptons plus MET searches and trileptons plus MET searches.
Yeah.
And trileptons searches is actually pretty broad. They don't even require missing energy.
Oh, they have a no MET. Yeah.
So that's, so if you have WZ, there'll be some sensitivity.
What cross sections are you starting off with? I mean,
yeah. So this is what this is the cross sections that you're expecting, yeah.
So if you pay the
maybe I'll show the next because then I put it in the my here to read in the plane m rho which is 0 pi pi, yeah. So
you have to multiply those by 10 to the minus 3, those numbers.
Yeah.
10 to the minus 1, that's 0.1 picobar.
Between 10 to the minus 3. We're talking about the leptonic branching fraction of W's and Z's, yeah? Yeah, so that would be...
Okay, so the SUSY trileptons are not useful.
I wouldn't expect they to be competitive, yeah? And at any time now, there will be this dedicated WZ and WW searches for speed one resonances. So that's... that's why. So here you can see what the current constraints will do, the parameters in terms of the mass. For the large 0.5, the bound is around 900 GeV. For a small one, it's close to 500. 500 and 900 GeV, depending on the coupling 0.5.
Go back one plot just so I see the G value. So if they reach 10 to the minus 1, which they might with one inverse.
Yeah, that's where you expect it to be. Yeah, but this is a rough range of the current LHC.
Yeah. Then G rho, smallest G rho with a not too large G rho pi is about 2.5, and that's still marginally acceptable according to you. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing you can see on this plot is that the parameter space consistent with unitarity actually extends all the way up to the 3 TeV, yeah? Where the cross section, this is the cross section in the LHC7, is only 10 to minus 5 picobarn, yeah? So 10 attobarns. Yeah? You never reach it in LHC7. With LHC14, the situation is a bit better because here you would be. Where was my plot? You're at the level of 0.0, femtobarnish cross section. That might be reachable with more than 100% of barn of data. So, however, yeah, the message from this is that the parameter space of this Higgs-less, of the simplest Higgs-less model, it actually still extends very far away, and it's not going to be excluded by any time this year or next year. There is still this vast regions of the parameter space, well, it's like between 2 and 3 TeV, 2 and 3 TeV resonance. The cutoff here is around 4 TeV. So this makes sense as an effective theory, and that's still requires a lot of work with the collider.
You had two slides or three slides on S&T, but then you didn't come back and use that to constrain your.
No, I don't want to use this indirect constraint.
S&T are the sum of everything in your.
Yeah,
theory.
That's because there's many other.
But in a sense, that what Marcus said, yeah, the conclusion I draw is that infrared contributions are not enough to make it consistent with electric processing observables. You have to rely on the fact that there is some unique contribution to that. And that's worrying, unsatisfying, but I don't want to tell experimentally to look here because here S is 0.5, and yeah. So that would be maybe too much. So.
And that's something stupid. What are always decaying to TT bar?
What? Then you have to look for TT bar as well.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. They are looking for TT bar.
Yes. Yeah, I mean,
is that still more suppressed than it would be for a heavy Higgs?
No, I don't understand the question. More suppressed.
Well, for heavy, regular Higgs, TT bar is still not the dominant decay mode.
If you look in terms of the five-dimensional model, yeah, if you localize your top far to the right, yeah, you have a large coupling of the top to resonances, and you can make it actually a dominant decay. Yeah?
Yeah,
so if the top is very composite, if the top is very composite, there will be additional dominant branch fraction into TT bar. Yeah, and then instead of looking at WWWZ, you have to. But this is not this simplified model. This is next to minimal simplified model. Yeah, with a composite top.
How general is the leptophobic nature of this row? You would say
that's thinking very general.
Result?
Because it comes from the fact that this coupling to the standard model will parametrically be suppressed by a small ratio of a weak coupling over the strong coupling. And that is always the case, and it actually grows stronger as you are pushed to heavier resonances. So yeah, you can of course cook up a model where your lepton is composite, but yeah, you'll have to pay. Terrible problems. On the other hand, this fact about the TT bar is not robust, as I was trying to mention. This is something that you can play with, and I think it's important to keep in mind that it could be large TT bar. Yeah, so, I mean, that's more or less the end of the story. So we will try to convince experimentalists to look into this parameter space and move forward and maybe design the search strategy based on this, using this simple kinematical model, and that's proven very fruitful in the case of supersymmetry. It might be also fruitful in this case. Maybe we'll discover some holes in our coverage, or we can.
Coming back to your production diagrams, is there a single production of the row? I forget now. Yeah, okay, so that's first
guy
there. Yeah. So suppose the WW signal that they see, or, enhancement that they see, were due to this row. Is that possible? For standard Higgs, the main thing is glue-glue fusion. Is there a glue-glue fusion, loop contribution to row production?
No, but what would be the cross section for 150 GeV row? The cross section would be very large, actually. It would be.
Isn't there a problem with Landau-Yang for that?
Well, that's. I was just about to ask that.
Because if you turn it around, it doesn't look good.
I didn't.
But there's some pies floating around in this.
So here's the Galilean cross section. You can expect that in this case it would be over 10 picobars. But it's not because you need a pretty small. The strong cupping would have to be very small to actually have 150 GeV row. Yeah. So that's the problem for a low scale technicolor. Yeah. Let's say.
Say that would give you unity. No, wait a minute. What problem is it?
I mean, the problem is that the strong coupling would have to be weak, yeah?
Right, and
maybe it's also worth pointing out. So, the same description, if you use the same description to QCD, these couplings you can measure. And they find that both G rho and G rho pi pi are of order 6. So, this is.
A sensible framework for that sort of thing, something that. Looking at with Ruchiro Kitano is just you could have electric symmetry breaking shared between some Techni sector and Higgs. And in that case, the Techni sector is naturally light and also couples less strongly to WW. It's basically an F over V suppression, where F is sort of the contribution to the W and Z masses. And in that case, you can actually have light things that would appear in like Higgs searches like that.
Suppose you just had this simplified approach. There's no inconsistent to take G rho small, or what goes wrong?
I would cringe, because of the small. It's consistent, it would be a consistent theory, but then it's probably excluded by the D0 searches, for WW and rho resonance. And would also be excluded. And would also be excluded by leptonium, because for such a light fine thing, if you are below the WW and WZ, it's actually different. If you are below WW and WZ threshold, the leptonic branching fraction would be large, and it would be excluded by searches for Z prime to leptons. In this case, I think because it would be much larger than for the Higgs, because Higgs couples to the mass, and in this case, rho couples in the same way, So that would be the.
I was trying to get straight. Okay, that's a good one.
So if you look at the, I didn't show all the constraints. So this is the Higgs, the LHC constraints, and this is the zero constraints on WWZ. But this comes from the leptonic branching fraction. So now if you want to go to this point in the parameter space, it is excluded by leptonic branching fraction. If I put it into my mathematical code, I can tell you for sure how much it's excluded, but I'm almost certain that it would be in this framework excluded by leptonic branching fraction, leptonic such as for leptonic resonances.
How does the inclusion of the operator you show can cancel S correlates with the radial cross section? As it needs.
It's a bleeding effect, yeah, because it's where was it? Here. So the way I parameterize it here is G over G rho. The mixing angle that I was talking about depends only in the subleading level on this epsilon. And this is this mixing angle between the rho and the W that sets the radial cross section. So it will not affect, unless epsilon is much larger than one, which you probably don't want, so in this context you would you don't affect the branch.
You can completely cancel us with this operator, right?
I can, if I want.
Something gets sick, right?
I know that you proved that it gets sick, but in this case, I didn't see anything that gets sick for epsilon equals to minus one, which would be the case too. Yeah, we can look at it. Maybe there is something that that I missed, but yeah. In this case, yeah, I mean. Which ghost? It's the kinetic mixing, yeah, but. Yeah, I have the expression here. I mean, I looked at the mass eigenvalues and everything, and I think it's still okay. But we can look if there is some sickness that I haven't spotted in this case.
And the other question was, what if you include other operations like v mu nu, the field strength, higher than mu, v mu times v mu nu. It will can be included without affecting unit values so much.
Yeah, I mean it will include, but you know, but this effect of this operator, you expect that it will be we could kick in only above, yeah, when the momentum involved are bigger than the mass, much bigger.
Around the mass, they can be important around the mass, right? At the energy much below the mass, they are not important, but on top of it.
We didn't look how they affect unitarity of.
Is it true that the momentum expansion breaks down at the m rho basically? I mean, that's the point that he's making here. If it does break down at m rho,
basically you don't have.
If you have to go close to m rho, you should have had in all kinds of junk.
So you don't have a small parameter, yeah, here that allows you to control it in a systematic way. So the only thing is that you can maybe argue is that the lessons from QCD, yeah, that this higher order operator are not changing the description of the raw meson in a particularly striking way. Yeah, so.
I mean, position electroweak is a question for a complete theory. Well, I don't think this is.
Yeah, but I think at the end, he talks now a bit. How would my. If I included all the sets of higher order operators, yeah? Could this affect the unitarity, my parameter space and the unitarity?
You can have a Higgs triplet that two GUV will give you a positive contribution to Q.
Yeah, but yeah, we're not talking about precision electric observables at the moment, more generally now.
But. I know, but I'm just saying that those will not affect the energy expansion, but they will correct T.
Okay. So I'm already at my conclusions. Yeah. Just the takeaway points that the full theory of electric symmetry breaking might be very well complicated, but I think it's pays off. Take a simplified approach just to understand the collider signatures and the kinematics of the parameter space. And what this teaches you is that actually the existing parameter space for this Higgs-less theories is still huge and will not go away anytime soon. Of course, unless they find the Higgs. Yeah, if they find the Higgs, which they might do, unfortunately, pretty soon. Then it's I know. I mean, talking about the Higgs, let's see what everybody talks about the Higgs, is a little bit swimming against the current, but I'm aware of that. That will, of course, invalidate this approach, yeah. But still, there is. This doesn't invalidate this approach completely, because then you can entertain the possibility that both the Higgs and the resonances take part in interizing W-W scattering. The framework that is known as the composite Higgs. And in a similar way, you can still describe the allowed parameter space. Of course, there's always a standard model point where the resonances are infinitely high, but you can still think about using this description to try to help experimentalists to understand what are the possibilities and what they are supposed to look for. Thanks.
So I assume that you only have a minimum global symmetry, so you only have one technique row, and or there is zero additional technique pions. And So one question that is, suppose you add additional technique pion, and that will affect all those branch ratios in the
Well, I was thinking about it, but just basically that it would be very interesting to have a similar approach, yeah, to have where you have a number of physical technipions, so that your row decays also to technipions, so you have some cascade decays. Yeah. Of course, you know, these models were popular in the context of this WJZ anomaly, and then that was when I was thinking about it more seriously. Now that the WJZ is almost dead, then. But it's still very interesting to consider this possibility.
Yeah. Second point is, suppose you don't have those additional technique pion, then that means I'm imagining there are some new strong dynamics with some specific color and with two flavor, correct? So if that's the case, I would imagine probably you should know what is the scaling property for those G rho pi pi and G rho and the mass of M rho over the decay constant as a function of 1 over Nc or Nc in some behavior. So I would think that maybe you will only have some one line in your all of your plots. And if you just take Nc equals to 2 or Nc equals to 3 and 4, etc. I would not think about that you have such a global parameter space if you don't have additional flavor.
Now he wants to say that, yeah, if I assume some specific n, I mean, I don't have, but doesn't n, okay, that's probably a discussion maybe for Blackboard later, yeah, but I'll be interested too, but yeah, I'm not sure if I'm really not allowed to consider it.
Let's thank Adam again.